the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
You're very welcome back to The Last Word. It's Ian Guider in for Matt today. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Oliver Bullough, who's an investigative journalist and author whose previous books have tracked corruption and how the financial system has facilitated that and bad actors. But he's the author of a new book called Everybody Loves Our Dollars. And Oliver, I'm fascinated by the premise for this book, because when I talk about cash in society, I usually talk about how none of us are using it anymore. But you have been tracking how criminals are increasingly turning to cash, and also how the financial system appears to be doing nothing about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been concerned about financial crime for a long time. It's been a speciality of mine ever since my time living in Russia in the former Soviet Union, where corruption is something that very much hits you in the face all the time. And you couldn't really, certainly in those days, you couldn't really move for news about oligarchs in London. And it became interesting to me because of that. I mean, this book is really about money laundering in the broader sense, just to try and understand why, if this is so important, trying to crack down on financial crime, because this is, you know, something that affects everyone globally, why is it that our governments have so spectacularly failed to do so, despite purportedly the fact that they're committed to it? And yeah, and as you mention, you know, cash money, we are, as ordinary people, you and me, using cash less and less on a day-to-day basis. In the UK, fewer than 10% of transactions now involve cash money. And yet governments are merrily printing more and more cash without really asking where and who is using it. And it is just, you know, one of these really irritating contradictions in the approach of governments who claim to be determined to tackle financial crime while at the same time essentially profiting very greatly from printing the most useful tool that financial criminals can use to evade the restrictions that governments themselves impose.
Yeah, because as part of your research for this book, you've gone off to the Federal Reserve, one of their printing plants in America, and you've noted how the amount of $100 bills in existence has increased and increased, even though we're using less physical cash. And the Federal Reserve saying, well, you know, we've noted this trend, but maybe talk to the Department of Justice about it.
Yeah, I mean, the Federal Reserve is great like that in that they let you into the factory to see the dollars being printed, which is pretty extraordinary. You don't get to see, sadly, the pounds being printed here in the UK or the euros in the eurozone. But it is an amazing sort of failure of imagination that they have these printing presses that are working flat out. They produce sort of something like 15.5 million banknotes a day, but yet they still can't keep up with demand. They're building a whole new factory in Maryland to keep up with demand. And, you know, the majority, I mean, the vast majority of the banknotes, they're printing $100 bills, despite the fact that you hardly ever see them in the US and can't really use them. And these are, yeah, essentially the raw material of financial crime being sent off around the world. And, you know, it is, I mean, once you start looking at these, seeing these contradictions in the heart of how the world is when it comes to tackling financial crime, you can't really miss them. I mean, that's just a particularly stark one.
And one of the great examples you give, and it's in the UK, where you talk about how Chinese drug smugglers are laundering money by using a very well-known retail shopping centre that lots of people go to.
Yeah, I mean, this is the world has been, you know, putting ever tighter restrictions on the financial system purportedly to stop money laundering since the 1970s, really. So it is actually pretty laborious to move money around. You know, and if you talk to, I mean, there are lots of people who will try and, you know, buying a house, for example, and you end up having to jump through a huge number of hoops, supposedly, to stop money laundering. Well, criminals have spotted this too, and they really don't want to have to jump through those hoops. So they've invented an entirely separate, essentially, financial system whereby they move value around the world, not by moving money, but just by moving stuff. So if they take cash from drugs gangs, they can spend it on luxury handbags, luxury goods, expensive watches and so on, which they can, you know, buy in among many other places. But Bicester Village is the one which police officers keep telling me about. And then they can ship those goods across the other side of the world, sell them at the other end. And you've essentially moved your money from one country to another without having to move any money at all. You know, this is, you know, I think undoubtedly it's a great sort of open secret of the luxury goods industry that a very large amount of the demand for their products comes from essentially money laundering. And, you know, there was an effort to crack down on this in France last year, but but the government retreated essentially because there was so much opposition from the luxury goods companies that they really didn't want to lose that business. But it is, you know, it is, I suppose, the reason I was so keen to talk about, you know, luxury handbags and so on, is it really does emphasizes how criminality is completely embedded in the everyday economy all around us. You know, we think about this as something that happens elsewhere, that maybe it happens in, you know, tax havens, the kind of places with palm trees and white beaches that you might see, you know, in movies about money laundering. But actually, in reality, it's something that happens on the high street, you know, in our shopping malls, you know, around us all the time. It's completely embedded in the economy. And it's something that we've really allowed to grow completely out of control.
Your previous book, and I've read one of your two previous books, Butler to the World, was exposing how the financial services industry, the consulting firms, the professional services firms kind of facilitate this for oligarchs and criminal gangs. But we were told post-financial crisis, post all of these scandals, of all of these leaks of the various papers from these Caribbean islands, that we were cracking down on this. And surely cracking down on cash by making people report if somebody comes in and spends €10,000 on a watch or $50,000 on a handbag, surely this is easier.
You would think so. But governments, they always seem a little bit like, to me, like someone who's a bit out of shape and who decides to get fit, and they go out and buy a really expensive piece of equipment, you know, a Peloton or a treadmill or something. Then everyone says, well done, gosh, well done, you're really committed, you've bought that expensive thing. But then they look at it and actually getting on the bike or getting on the treadmill is too much like hard work. So, you know, they're very good at passing these pieces of legislation when it comes to stopping financial crime. But when it comes to actually doing the hard work, the real hard grind of, you know, gathering the information, providing sufficient resources to the law enforcement agencies and so on, they're significantly worse at that. So, you know, it is difficult because, you know, the newspaper headlines always go in their favor when they've passed a piece of legislation. But we really need to try and, you know, keep their feet to the fire to a certain extent and to make sure that actually they follow through with the commitments they make. Because, you know, this is, you know, financial crime is something that affects all of us. I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, you like me will have relatives who've been targeted by these kind of fraudsters who phone them up and make them move money, you know, out of their bank account. You know, you see, you know, the kind of stories about people trafficking on the news every day. It's stories about terrorism and the rise of terrorist groups in the Middle East and Central Africa. It's a real huge problem around the world. And the fact that our governments are essentially failing to fulfill their commitments to do something about it is a real disgrace.
A lot of people would have thought in the last number of years, because most of us now either tap our phone or tap our cards and send each other money through the banking apps, that all of this cash is on its way out. And the simple thing to do would be to say, well, look, we are taking away these mandates for retailers or wherever it is to take cash. They can only do electronic transactions that can be traced.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, obviously it would be an option. I mean, it should be said that quite a lot of people do still rely on cash. I don't have a particular problem with banknotes per se, and particularly for people living on a budget, it can be really helpful to have, you know, your money in cash so you know how much you've got left to spend. But I mean, you don't need any reason why you would need any bill larger than a 20 euro note in the Eurozone, for example. And yet the ECB merrily prints 50 euro notes, 100 euro notes and 200 euro notes. There are still a significant number of 500 euro notes out there, even though they're not being printed anymore. And those are really of no use to anybody apart from to money launderers. The same is true of $100 bills in the United States. So, you know, I'm happy for people to use cash by all means, but I don't think we need these big bills. And that, you know, this is just another sign of the kind of hypocrisy that governments get up to. I mean, though, of course, it should be said while you're talking about electronic payment methods, you know, the cryptocurrency industry, which is growing all the time, particularly because of the enthusiasm for it of the new administration in the United States, is a whole extra form of electronic payment that perhaps we shouldn't get into now.
As I said, you've done an awful lot in the last decade or so to look at transparency in the world. And when I think of in my own day job as a financial journalist over the years, I keep seeing stories against pushback against transparency requirements for even big organizations pushing back against it. Are you worried that perhaps the enthusiasm is going away from governments and law enforcement and that the lobbyist for big banks, big institutions is now actually winning?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case. We've seen this in the United States with the Corporate Transparency Act has been essentially gutted. And we saw some really effective strategic litigation in the EU brought in Luxembourg on behalf of a wealthy client by a British law firm, actually, to try and end the efforts to have more transparency in the European Union. So, yeah, I mean, there is a very well organized lobby out there who really doesn't want us to know what the money's doing, where it's going, who's buying what, and so on. But I think that's just more a reason for us to know that we're on the right track. If they're fighting back that hard against efforts to expose what they're up to, that's just all the more reason for us to try and figure out what that is.
We always think that these are criminal gangs and international criminal organisations, but are some governments and some countries that may have malign intent, are they also taking the benefit of cash transactions to get up to things abroad that perhaps would be traced through the banking system?
Yeah, we've certainly seen this a lot with the Russians in recent years, certainly since 2022, when Russians were largely excluded from the Western financial system. They've built up, Russian money laundering gangs have built up some really elaborate money laundering systems to allow them to fund their activities in the West and to fund the oligarchs' lifestyles who've been cut off from their bank accounts. These have been, you know, exposed to a certain extent by law enforcement agencies, but they're still building all the time. There's just this tremendous amount of demand. And again, it's about using cash. It's about using crypto. And it's about, you know, essentially the fact that our law enforcement agencies are spectacularly outgunned. They don't have enough people or enough resources to do even a fraction of the work that's, you know, required of them. You know, and this is, you know, at the time when, you know, obviously the war is grinding on in Ukraine, you know, the Ukrainians need all the help that we can give them. And yet we're failing on the home front to do the kind of work we should be doing to make sure that the Russians are not able to buy, you know, components for their drones by using, you know, these nefarious money laundering techniques.
And just finally, if we're in the shops, if we're buying something and we see somebody paying cash for a high value item, should we automatically think this should be reported?
I mean, it may well be that someone just happens to have a very large quantity of cash. It may be in one time in 10,000, it's completely unsuspicious. But I would say that the vast majority of cases, if someone turns up with an envelope full of banknotes to buy a luxury piece of clothing or handbag or a luxury watch, then yeah, that's pretty sus, I would say, yeah.
Well, the book is Everybody Loves Our Dollars, and it's by Oliver Bullough, and it is a fascinating read and follows on from Oliver's previous work, which are really worthwhile reading. Oliver, thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word.
Thanks very much for having me on the show.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.